Superintelligence: Path, Dangers, Strategies by Nick Bostrom. Now, this is the first couple of chapters. I'm just doing a review on the first couple of chapters of this book. It's a book I've been meaning to read for a while, and it's a book about artificial intelligence. It's highly recommended by Bill Gates, it says at the front cover. Also, Elon Musk talks about this book a lot as well. So, for my first impressions of the book, it's a very smart book. Like, there's a lot of obviously complex language around artificial intelligence, machine learning, but it also goes into human neuroscience. So it poses the question about, like, the mind and the brain and how we've evolved and how a supercomputer could be created from the brain. There's the first two chapters, like, are very interesting in terms of the different subjects that it goes into. So the first one is past developments and present capabilities. So I found that quite interesting. So there's growth modes and big history, great expectations, seasons of hope and despair, state of the art, opinions about the future and machine intelligence. So he goes into various different examples of AI, and it's also about the underlying threat of AI. Because AI is seen as a really good thing, and he goes into the examples of our everyday life and how we use AI in our everyday life. One of the things he pointed out was that I think he thinks that the Google AI engine, in terms of recommendations, like you see on YouTube, for example, the ads, the recommendation for content, is probably like the best AI currently. As of writing this book, which I found very interesting that he would say that, because obviously, I mean, for myself, I'm a YouTube creator and I've been a student of YouTube for many years, and just how well the algorithm on YouTube seems to know you better than you know yourself, almost. Like, it knows when you want to watch something. It's not just, oh, your history of content. Like, I've got a history of content and the algorithm knows, oh, I like mixed martial arts, it's going to show me more mixed martial arts stuff, or I like movies, so it's going to show me more movie related stuff, or I like books, etc. It's not that. It goes into nuances of being able to recommend new content, related content, and potentially content that might not even be that same subject that you'll be potentially interested in. And it's all based on your history, your viewing patterns, everything you've clicked on, every thumbnail that you've responded to, every title you've responded to, the amount of watch time, more importantly, in terms of how long you spent watching certain pieces of content. Now, that can be completely related content, like, for example, looking at, I don't know, the history of Russia, or the history of China, you know, or the history of the United States, whatever. So you might have watched videos on that, but not as much as I've watched, like, the other ones I mentioned, like martial art videos or books or movies or etc. But then it knows at a specific time, I might be more interested in a history of a certain nation. So it might give me, hey, the history of Egypt or the history of Azerbaijan or whatever. And it might, or even better, it might talk about the constructive history, something to do with construction, or something to do with even linked to the other stuff, like how the Chinese movie industry is now booming, or something like that. That it's very interesting, actually, how Google is, that he mentioned Google, because I think that it's very sophisticated in terms of it's the AI's ability to kind of make recommendations to the viewer. But yeah, it gets into a lot of detail. There's a lot of things. Obviously, I'm not an expert in AI, other than being a consumer and being curious about it. But he goes into a lot of details about AI, of the mathematical equations. He talks about a lot of the theories. He talks about the state of the art, like in terms of like chess as well. He talks about like the AI machines that were able to beat chess masters. Before that happened, it wasn't fathom that to people that that would be a possibility. And he talks about the once AI does achieve that kind of that benchmark, then it no longer is talked about as AI. It just becomes a normal thing, you know, because you look around us and you see that the way that the world has developed, like with voice technology, he talks about that with Alexa and Google and, you know, Siri and things of that nature. Like all of that is really smart AI. You know, voice detection AI, voice AI is something that, you know, wasn't around like 10, 15 years ago. And the idea that you could have a voice commanded device kind of do things such as turn on the lights in your house, like with smart lights and smart objects and things of that nature, or just recommend things to you, or like make purchases on Amazon or wherever. Yeah, that idea was very much a AI thing, you know, but now it's just a normal thing, you know. But that is the way of the world. Like when you look at all the technology we've created since the dawn of time, like from the spear to the, you know, the rocket, you know, the space shuttle, like it's or even what Elon's doing with the Falcon rockets, you know, looking to send, you know, machinery and very soon humans to Mars. Like that innovation of technology is so exponential, but so is a artificial intelligence, you know. And we talk about, I always like talk about the caution. I'm a cautionary, I'm a person who's very conscious of cautionary tales of AI, especially as a movie guy, because, you know, I grew up watching James Cameron films, and he, you know, the Terminator films are very much a cautionary tale, you know, fiction or a cautionary tale, but could be factual if we're not careful about where AI can go. I'm always worried about, like, obviously the military. You know, you had the arms race for the Cold War, and the Cold War, the arms race, you know, for nuclear power. So when nuclear weapons becomes, you know, when everyone's got nuclear power, then we have peace, because no one wants to like launch a nuclear weapon in fear of the retaliation of someone else. But now there's a race towards AI, and if that is something obviously that can be used for defense, it could be used as a military weapon, and the nation who excels on that, you know, above everybody else, will become a new superpower, because they'll have the weapon that everyone else doesn't have. So, but then where does it end? You know, if it's an artificial intelligence that's able to make strategic decisions or malfunctioning decisions, that could have, especially if it's capable of launching nuclear power, you know, nuclear weapons, which is the cautionary tale of Terminator. Like, this is something we've got to be that very cautious of. I think there was a conversation between Lex Fridman and John Danaher, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach, or the mixed martial arts coach, and they were talking about AI, and they were talking about a possible robot or android able to beat Gordon Ryan. Gordon Ryan's, like, if you don't know, he's like the number one grappler jiu-jitsu guy on the planet, so he's got very strong martial arts skills. And we're talking about machines that are able to beat him. If there was a machine that was able to beat him, just like, for example, with chess, there was a machine, the machine was able to beat Gary Kasparov, is his name, I'm probably butchering his name, but he's one of the greatest chess players of all time, and he was beaten by a machine. And they were having a discussion about it, and for me it was very frightening, because it is comprehensible that at one point the AI would be able to develop AIs that, based on all the data that we have from video footage, from from recorded history, from observations of the human body and everything else, that we would be able to create an android or a robot that could beat Gordon Ryan in a grappling match. But the problem is that, unlike Gordon Ryan, is not human, it's a machine. So it's just programmed to kind of execute mathematical equations to have a certain outcome. So where does the consciousness come in? Where does the morals come in? How does he know when to stop? Like, if he has Gordon Ryan in a stranglehold, how does he know when Gordon Ryan's tapping to let go? You know, it's very to me, it's very frightening when it comes to martial or military kind of implications of AI. And I think one of the things he does talk about was like the difference between, will it be like a human integration with AI or like a an android that is like able to beat Gordon Ryan? And one of the outcomes that John Danaher said in that conversation was it'll probably be the latter, where it's kind of like AI integrated with the human biology, kind of like the Matrix, like, you know, inserting knowledge and skills and aids into your brain. But I mean, those kind of things already exist. You know, you have like people who are, is it paraplegic, and they're able to use their brain to send signals to a machine to do certain things, whether it be operating a wheelchair or a voice activated machine, so they're able to communicate. So, you know, these things are already possible. But when you think about it, like, in terms of what I'm talking about, in terms of like, you know, military or war and combat, that scares me. So it is something, and I think Elon Musk talks about this a lot, where you need to be, there needs to be regulations around it, because otherwise, you know, humans will take it too far. And I think that's a very good point, because it is exciting and it can be to the good of humanity, and it has, anyway, our technology in general has been, you know, a good thing for humanity. But at the same time, you know, people get too greedy, they get too ambitious, where they're taking it way too far, and things like that could happen. So I think this book is along the line of, like, from what I've read so far, it is about that cautionary tale of like, what we need to be aware of with AI, and how we mustn't take it too far, because on one side, obviously, it can be a big help to humanity. It can help us live a better life, you know. Having artificially intelligent trucks that self-driving is a good thing, because it means that people that have to be on the road for 12, 14 hours a day, you know, sitting in a truck driving, they can do something else. They can do so. At first, obviously, the displacement of jobs is a pain, but it's just like with farming. Like, a lot of people used to be farmers, but now there's not so many farmers because the machines have made those farmers obsolete, doing the manual labor at least. There's still people who run farms, but, you know, there's not as many people like on the land, you know, planting the seeds or reaping the harvest. You know, you've got machinery that can do that in like a fraction of the time, you know, and take up a lot more of the real estate in a short space of time. So, you know, there is obviously benefits to AI, but there's also cautionary tales, like I was saying, with the military and martial arts kind of thing. It does worry me. Those things worry me a little bit with AI. But then chapter 2 goes into paths of super intelligence, so kind of explaining what artificial intelligence is. Not for programming, but just like a blueprint of the existence of artificial intelligence. And he talks about like the intelligence being almost like having a learning machine operating like a child. He talks about Alan Turing's notion of a child machine, so that he wrote in 1950. So it's kind of like, instead of trying to produce a program to simulate an adult mind, why not rather try to produce one that simulates a child's. So that's quoted on page 27. So that idea I thought was quite interesting, because then what it's doing is the artificial intelligence is learning, like, because children learn at a very high rate, you know, a lot of, they learn a lot more rapidly than adults who are stuck in their ways. If you want to learn a new language, or you want to start learning a new skill, it's best, people say, oh, I wish I'd done it when I was a child. There's a reason for that. One is time, but also your brain is less, is more malleable. So it's like when someone's trying to learn, like, say for example, if someone's trying to learn kickboxing, like Muay Thai, which is a martial art that requires you to learn how to strike, not only punch, but to do kicks, to do clinch work, to use your elbows and knees. Now, if this person's been boxing their whole life, then they're going to have ingrained habits that won't work for Muay Thai. Might have worked for boxing, but not work for Muay Thai, such as like bobbing and weaving, certain head movements that won't work, because now you've got to be aware of other weapons, such as the kick, you know. So if you kind of weave in a your head in a certain position, you might be open to a head kick, you know what I mean? Or you might be more susceptible to not being able to defend elbow strikes. So you might be good at parrying or moving away from the jabs or the cross or hook, but then you're not aware of how to defend against, or the habits that you've developed over the years can be detrimental for evading, you know, upward elbow, spinning elbow, a knee, a kick, the clinch work. Maybe you put your head in a certain position that allows your opponent to get you in a clinch. So as opposed to like someone who's starting from scratch, they're like an open book, you know. So that's what I was taking it from. That it's like, yes, if you want to create like a highly sophisticated, highly efficient form of AI, then having the AI be constructed in a way that it's like a child as opposed to an adult brain would be more feasible, you know. So that was a very interesting kind of conversation that it has in chapter 2. I thought there's some good points there. It goes into a lot of detail. I mean, I'm just like, again, just trying to understand a lot of these computations and theories and science behind AI just from reading this book, but it's a lot of new data for me. But it's really interesting, and just understanding just the way we think as humans. He talks about the brain as well, because you have to talk about the human brain and our capacity to learn, and then comparing it to artificial intelligence, because that is basically what it's kind of, it's modeled off, but it's not, you know. But it is essentially a learning machine. It's something that's able to learn, like we talked about earlier with Google's AI. It's a learning machine. It learns how viewing behavior is, in order to recommend it more content to keep that viewer on the platform of YouTube, for example. So it is essentially about how can artificial intelligence learn at a more rapid rate, you know, and what are the dangers behind that as well, you know, because it'll be able to learn at a rate that human beings won't be able to learn, you know. But yeah, the first two chapters are very interesting, just talking about the brain, talking about AI in general, talking about certain artificial intelligence algorithms, such as like the Google algorithm and a few other things, you know. You know, like machines able to beat chess masters. But so far it is very interesting. There's a lot of information, a lot of data. The author does say at the beginning in the intro not to be intimidated too much by that, especially for the, you know, a viewer who's not like super like clued up, which I'm not, on artificial intelligence or, you know, machine learning. But it's something I think you need to understand, because it's a big part of our world, it's a big part of our future, and it's something that we're all interacting with every day. You know, everyone has a phone in their pocket. These are AI devices, essentially. You know, they've got voice commands such as Siri, Alexa, all these things already on there. So they really know how to... They know a lot about you. You know, they have a lot of data on you. They know a lot about you. They have apps on there that also relay information about you in order to serve you. But it's also information, you know, that's going to learn more about you as a human being, that can be used to serve, you know, companies to market towards you, which is fine. I mean, it is what it is. We all sign up for that because we like the convenience of the machines. Machines have made our lives a lot easier. They've taken us out of the African savannah and allowed us not to worry about like survival so much. Even though that will always be something that we need to be concerned about, it's not something that's an immediately the concern of people in modern civilization. But yeah, this book is very detailed, and it goes into a lot of details regarding cognition, regarding AI, regarding the human brain. But again, it's all around this question around, you know, what is a super intelligence, and where are we going with this? Where do we need to be cautious of it? You know, but he's talking about a lot of details around AI, which again, I is something I'm going to have to read a couple of times just to get like a little bit more clued up on some of the details he talks about in these opening chapters. But it's a fascinating read. I definitely recommend it. I think it's something that will definitely just like open your mind up and your brain to the possibilities of the future, and also just to where technology is today and the amount of AI that's around us and the things it's able to do, you know. So I mean, I definitely recommend this already, and again, I'm just on the first two chapters, you know. Highly recommend it, you know. So I mean, with this first two chapters, it goes into a lot of detail, but it does pose a lot of questions, and it lets you kind of be aware of the artificial intelligence that does already exist, and where the history of even human intelligence comes from, and how we are, maybe where we're going as well. That was my thoughts when reading the first two chapters. So the next chapter I'll be reading is chapter 3, Forms of Super Intelligence. So I'm interested to see where the book goes from here. But it's definitely something I'm going to have to read a couple of times, I think. But I definitely recommend this. Definitely something you need to know about as a human being on this planet who, with artificial intelligence growing, it's going to affect all of us. So it's not something to ignore. So with chapter 3, the subjects we see is Forms of Super Intelligence. It's the main chapter, or the main section, what it's called. But we have speed superintelligence, cognitive superintelligence, quality superintelligence, direct and indirect reach, source of advantage for digital intelligence. So I'll come back and do a podcast on that, give my thoughts. And I'd like to do that for this book, just because it is a lot of details, and I'm trying to capture basically what I'm getting from these chapters as I go along, so I'm more prepared to give you a more in-depth review once I do finish this book, because it has about 15 chapters with multiple sub-chapters in each chapter. So that is the first two chapters of Nick Bostrom's Super Intelligence, Path, Dangers and Strategies. Book I highly recommend already, even though I've just read two chapters. Definitely open your mind. Comment down below on Twitter. Let me know what you thought of this book, if you've read it, or if you've read the first two chapters, let me know what your thoughts on it. Anything I missed out, obviously, if you're smarter than me regarding artificial intelligence and machine learning, which I'm sure a lot of you listening are, please do leave your tweet and let me know some more details on your thoughts of the opening chapters of this book. Hopefully by the end of the book, I'll be able to have a more intelligent conversation about AI than my limited knowledge currently. Anyway, I shall see you next time for more podcasts on books, movies, martial arts, and the lot. Peace.